You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamiting the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Yo.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, July the 15th, open brackets Thursday, close brackets, comma, part four, the final part.
When will this day ever end?
Wow.
Well, yes. I know what happens next. But talking of days which never end. But first, this day must end. And we deal with two plot lines here. With Rohan's back and Hayato finding out exactly what his dad's up to.
Well, not exactly, but pretty much.
Yes. Well, and also, yeah. Pretty much more than anybody else has found out so far.
Yeah.
But he knows that Moida is afoot.
Yes.
That's enough for him.
Yeah.
But first, Rohan's got this stand on his back. So he called Koichi over, and Koichi does not believe him. He thinks he's playing a prank on him.
I wonder why he would ever think such a thing.
Yeah, again, I have no sympathy for Rohan, so...
So all that manga writing money, but no friends.
And the
story of his life, huh?
The him imploring Koichi, can I, Koichi? I thought we were friends. You know, as Koichi's like, dude, I'm sick of your fucking shit.
No. I know we're all in this together to try and catch the serial killer before he kills again, but I mean, don't have to like you.
Yeah. I called you because I couldn't call those other two jackasses.
Because they definitely wouldn't believe me. Yeah. Those guys are assholes.
Maybe they had a good reason to, Rohan. Have you looked at that? Look at the mirror once in a while?
Well, to be fair, he has a legitimate gripe with Josuke. He caused his house to be burnt down because he was cheating at dice.
The reason he's currently possessed by a stand is inadvertently because Josuke burnt his house down. Yeah,
and obviously just thinks Okuyasu is an idiot.
Well, that's because that Rohan wasn't observing proper magnifying glass safety protocol.
That's true.
Too caught up in his own little plots and schemes.
Too caught up with playing dice with a teenager, yeah.
But yes, he has been... To think that Koichi is his friend out of the lot of them when he's been the worst to Koichi.
Yeah, he screwed over Koichi the most out of all of them, really.
Yes. Mm. Kept on inviting him back to his house and stealing his life story for a comic.
Oh, dear.
So he's got to go and... He decides he's going to go to the hotel and get Joseph and Jotaro to... Maybe they'll believe him. So then you've got the long, complicated plan of how do I walk from my house to the hotel without anyone seeing my back.
Was this a game like kids played when they were little or something? Because it seems like there's a lot of fun ways. It's kind of like the floor is lava, don't let anyone see your back. That kind of thing.
Yes. I was thinking about that. One was a little kind of puzzle to try to figure out, you know.
Yeah. He comes up in some ingenious ways, but when he crossed the street, I figured he was just going to like lie on his back and sort of like crab across the street.
Yeah, that worked for the stairs, so I think he could have just done that. I mean, he does.
It wouldn't be any less embarrassing than what he did end up doing. So,
well, he goes for a strategy of going back to back from another guy, just to think, well, people. Don't seem to be mindless, walking by in their own thing. Even the guy he's back to back with doesn't seem to really notice or care until Cheap Trick, the stand on his back, starts like mouthing off saying, "Hey, fucker, walk faster."
Yeah, he also had written in him, "Don't turn around for a minute."
So the dude was getting increasingly annoyed, but not sure why he couldn't do anything about it. Yeah, that was pretty good.
But the best bit, of course, is when he's surrounded by cats and dogs.
Because... Oh, that's fucking amazing. He's walking down the street, back against like a wall like of just someone's house, and there's a dog by a car, and he's like, "Oh, fucking dogs." And then there's a cat in the tree, and he's like, "Ah, oh, fucking cats." And then there's like a million fucking cats and dogs.
And because it's the author insert, it's perfect. Because if you've read up to this point or watched up to this point...
Yeah, you're like, oh, no.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Because the stand has told them that this guy loves killing cats and dogs.
He's been doing it. It's him. It's been Rohan all along, you guys.
It's just a fear of, oh, you just walked into a bad neighborhood, buddy. You're about to get mugged.
Oh dear. Yeah, that's a pretty great moment. And also, it's kind of like, what the fuck, when the reveal of the sheer amount of cats and dogs.
Yes.
Like, basically, that tree has more cats than weeds.
It's like the birds, but with cats. You know, there's like a...
Yeah, exactly.
A rookery of cats up there.
Oh, dear.
But luckily, it turns out that apparently all talking stands can communicate with animals.
Is it that, or was it just he could talk to animals?
He could, but then so could Koichi-stan. Koichi-stan told all the animals to leave. Yeah. They went away.
I guess they are psychic manifestations, and he does have that conversation with Rohan. He's like, hey, do your powers work on animals? He's like, well, if they're intelligent enough.
Yeah.
I guess if they can understand a few words, like go home, that kind of thing.
Yes, because presumably Rohan could write in them, and he was writing in them, but there were so many he couldn't write in all of them at once.
Yeah. Right, so go home, your dinner's ready.
You have a good boy.
Oh, dear.
But then they try and use the freeze level 3, or what it was called, to make the stand come off his back, but...
Starts tearing his back away with the stand. Yeah.
And then you got that grim bit where he's sliding away with his back against the wall and leaving this bloody smear.
I was like, that's going to get you stopped by the cops, like... Excuse me, sir. You're leaving blood on everyone's houses.
I had to take you in for vandalism of his house.
Why didn't he just get a taxi? Like,
yeah,
well,
it's like you're sitting in the back of a taxi. The taxi driver can't see your bag. No one behind you can see your bag because you're in a chair.
Because Dwayne,
yeah,
he needed to go to this specific location. You can't really get a taxi too.
Because he was lying when he was saying that he was going to the hotel.
Yeah. That was my initial thinking, but yeah.
Yes, because he slides down there and then he starts acting like a... Basically, the thing's gloating that he's either going to die or go insane. So then he starts acting like he's going insane and saying, Koichi, ah, you want to see my back? I'll show you my back.
That really reminded me of... what's that guy who does those great horror mangas?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you want to see my back? I'll show you my back. That kind of like repeated going crazy kind of thing.
Yeah, they do all go like that.
It really reminds me of that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then the stand's gleeful. He thinks he's got him. He's going to get a new host. And then Koichi notices the postbox and realizes where he is.
I could see that in the background that it showed that sign, and since it's specifically subtitled, I was like, "Oh fuck, I know where they are."
Yes,
the post box, the dog shit's still there.
all the cues, yeah,
everything's in place.
Yeah, and they're in the ghost alley, and the one thing you shouldn't do as you're leaving the ghost alley is look behind you.
Yeah, which obviously, as Rohan says, the stand cannot help but do because of its nature.
Yes,
and since those things can't see you, they just grab you. Whatever the hell those ghost things are, it pulls him off his back without hurting Rohan or something?
Yes.
Yeah,
because it's not another stand power, so it's something
ghost
else.
Power.
And then the best bit is, I don't know whether heaven or hell exists, but just in case, I'm going to write go to hell in you.
That's a bit of extra dickery, but you know, that's Rohan all over, I suppose.
And then, meanwhile, Kira has had a... He's, like, trying to resist murdering people as this one couple really annoys him.
Yeah, well, initially he sees some random woman who's like, yeah, you have lovely hands, and you're putting it through your lovely hair, and I'd love to murder you and take your hand as my girlfriend, but I'll be okay today, you know, I can hold it off. And then this just... You know those people on the train, that kind of... The very loud ones. Also, that dude was wearing a shirt, like, way too small for him.
Yeah. kind of people who have played fucking music on their phones, no earbuds in, and they turn it off, and you're the one who's crazy. You're the one who's got the fucking social problem. No. No cure's a bad guy and all, but these are times when I think, you know, maybe this is the solution.
I think that's the sympathy for Kira kind of working, because he's always killing assholes.
But
like even the little kid he killed was a little dick.
But at the same time, that quickly erodes by the end of this episode.
Oh, no. He's a murderer. Listen, they might be assholes, but it's not legal to murder assholes.
Because this is the first time we've seen how he sets about murdering someone whose hand he's going to take.
oh yeah, that's super creepy.
Oh yeah, we're seeing his process, if you will, going about this.
Like, did he purposely bump into them going off the train so they would see his dorky nail scissors?
Oh, I'm sure he did. Yeah,
I was wondering, was that part of the plan? You know,
no, I'm pretty sure the way the shot's framed, it's him bumping into them.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Like, purposely dropping his nail clippers out. I was like, if they comment on the nail clippers, I get to murder them.
He must have watched last week's Bono Bono.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so it goes around to their the guy's apartment, blows him up.
He just walks into the guy. The guy is trying to say, "Hey, what the fuck? Who the fuck are you?" Blam! He's just dissolved into atoms.
Yeah. Just kind of slow mo walks through the ash of what that dude was, and then says to you, "Want to say, hey, how about you cut my nails? They're getting really long, huh?" It's like, and just the creepiness is like, oh, I'm not mad at you. This is my favorite part. And it's just like, oh, God, oh, I don't like this guy.
Well, he has been able to murder anybody in weeks. So it's probably all that being released, all those pent up burdens coming out all at once.
And he does mention, it's like, oh, this is just my nature. I'm just, it's just such a creepy little fucking bit. And your one's off freaking out since you saw her boyfriend explode.
Yeah, well, that's just the way he is, no? Like, he also twists, like, no, rationalizes why he does this thing. He did it with Koichi at length before. No, I just want to have an average life. I just want to, you know, go to work, eat my lunch, kill somebody, and then go home and then go to bed at a sensible hour. Is that so much to ask?
Oh, dear.
And yeah, he murders her as well, but he's caught on camera. It's all been caught on camera by his son.
Mm. Mm. He realizes the kid is like, hey, this isn't his school room. Is that a video camera he has while he's running far away from here?
Yes. It does take him a while.
Like, I didn't lock the door. I should do that when I murder people.
It's almost like he can't process the fact that he might have made a mistake. Or that someone could figure out.
He does think he's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hubris might be his downfall.
Yeah. And I've just missed his, like, Jotaro arriving on the scene of the crime in his apartment.
How was Jotaro there? Like, how up on their freaking their clues are they?
If you remember before, he was going over, like, the documents given to him about recent disappearances. Yeah. And the girl in the train was talking to her boyfriend about, you know, her dad said such a fucking asshole, so she ran away from home to show him what for.
So she was a missing person, but not for the reason of Kira. But
exactly.
So that makes sense.
Go to the apartment, and now, like, oh, I see there's evidence of, you know, this. They've been here recently. There's been a drop of blood right here, so obviously I'm just missed him. He's just too late.
I thought Jotaro had up-to-the-minute information. It's like, she just went missing this evening or something. It's like, well, looks like I'm going to check that place out.
I know the show is about, you know, strange, like, robots and muscle men, like, manifesting all your psychic potential, but, you know, it's also almost completely, like, rational and completely explainable when it comes to little dealers like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jotaro just misses him. So he's going home and the kid is in the bath.
Yeah. And then we get a lengthy battle between a man and a child.
Both naked.
And the child manages to outwit the man.
Yeah.
And basically blackmailing him into not killing him and his mother.
Even though one of his strands of hair has been turned into a bomb.
Yeah, but there are cameras everywhere, and if something were to happen to him in that footage, you know, who knows where it might, like, wind up, and it will, like, the crimes be on show for all to see. So watch your back.
I've even got footage of that weird cat plant you're hiding in the loft.
Yeah.
Like, what does he think his dad is? Like, a body snatcher or something? Like, an alien? That's a cat plant.
Demon or alien, yeah. Remember, aliens do exist, Wayne. That's really
that is true. There's at least one. Oh, dear.
It's much more simpler. He was shot by a strange arrow that was forced from a meteorite, and they gave him, like, a cat man that can turn you into a bomb.
I really enjoyed this whole episode, but that scene was like super creepy, and not just because obviously it's kind of weirder to Westerners of, hey, I'll wash your back, kid, kind of thing, but it's taking that kind of level of family intimacy and making it just super sinister.
Yes, because we know it's not really his dad. He knows it's not really his dad.
Obviously, his dad knows. It's like, I'm personally want to kill you right now because I know you're up to shit.
The boy trying to keep up the polite facade.
Yeah.
It's okay, Dad. You don't need to do that. Oh, I insist, my dearest son. Let me get that for you.
And it's such a nice change of kind of like to go into that kind of creepy mode after. I guess the intense action of not wanting someone to see your back.
It was stressful.
It was it was a definitely different kind of tension. All right. So it was nice that they got to mix it up. Yeah, I've really enjoyed this four-parter of the same day. It's done a really good job of bouncing back and forth between different kinds of stories.
Mm.
This episode was looking a little rough around the edges animation-wise.
Oh, it was,
though.
Yeah. That's
the latter half, definitely. I get that it was supposed to be a bit sinister and off-putting with the whole father and son bad time scene, but it did look really, really, really weird as well.
Maybe they couldn't get someone who wanted to draw naked guys.
Kira does have some weird musculature going on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, sometimes you wonder whether that is part of the animation process or whether they're just copying that straight out of the comic.
True. It's difficult to tell.
Yeah. It's like, if you've ever seen any of the manga for, like, Baki the Grappler, it's like Kira has that same kind of anatomy going on with himself. I kind of want to see his back and see if he can flex his muscles and make a demon's face appear as well.
Okay, that was JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. 5 more episodes to go.
Oh yeah, I've forgotten about that. Well, maybe the live action film will tide us over in the meantime.
Ends the Friday before Christmas. Next up, talking of things ending, Dragon Ball Super, episode 66, The Climactic Battle, The Miraculous Power of a Relentless Warrior, in which they pull out all the stops to give us a pretty great fight.
Yeah, animation stepping up in this case, yeah.
Yeah, this was, and also character design.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's a fight between, first of all, Goku and Fusion Zamasu, and during that fight his face starts getting a bit wonky, melty.
He starts half melding, and the Kai's explanation is, well, he is immortal, but he's half mortal. And it's like, what, literally like his fucking right hand side?
They're like two like positively charged ions.
Yeah, he's gone all purple and melty, and
the last blow Goku gets in sort of then buggers his hand up as well.
Oh, he seems to have like broken both his arms, kamehameha-ing too hard, so he has to try and fight Zamazov with his legs until he knocks him out again.
Then they use the earrings to fuse, and we get an explanation of why they fell apart previously.
It's like, actually, it only fuses you permanently if you're a Supreme Kai.
Yes.
Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And you'll have exactly 1 hour. Remember that.
Yeah. I thought the explanation prior was that they wore off because of some weird thing when they got their essence absorbed by Majin Buu in all of
the
control.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're probably just rewriting history as season.
Even then, it could, if they wasn't able to unfuse, it could be as simple as, well, I could just do what the other guys did and just wish for them to be unfused.
Yeah, just get the Dragon Balls. But the Dragon Balls are destroyed. But we have a time machine. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, now we have these new rules in place. It means we could be able to see Vegito and other weird mashups of people coming together now, possibly in the very near future. We do have a tournament coming up, after all.
Vegeta's reluctance to fuse was pretty comical.
That was probably one of the best comedy bits in it, where he's really like, I gotta fuse with Goku because we're not gonna beat him otherwise, but I hate Goku.
It's like, let me think about it.
And he's just like, his face of concentration as he's trying to make the choice.
And they do have the double voice as Vegeta.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things I'm disappointed with. I would have liked to have the double voice with Fusion Zamasu. Of continuing to have Black's voice in there as well.
Well, I guess they are both Zamasu, so it makes sense that they have the
true.
Same voice. But even though they had obviously two different voices when they used Goku Black. Yeah.
Yeah, this is when Zamasu then starts speechifying again about how he's accepted the sin of the mortal into his body by fusing with the body of Son Goku.
Yeah, where your man tries to go like, dude, you're fucking half mortal now. You can't destroy all mortals, idiot. But I did like the way Vegito. Punched him in the middle of his speech because I was like, just fucking hit him while he's talking.
And the best bit throughout the animation in this episode is the way the melted side of his face gets more and more expressive and more insane, while the Zamasu side of his face is still fairly stoic and static.
It starts losing it towards the end because even he's like, you know, his teeth get sharper, his eyes get a little more manic. But at the
same time, his eyebrows never fly as high up as the other side of his face is going.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's good design, all right.
I think my favorite part of this little fight was, you know, Sebastian thinks he has Vegito like down for the count, and it's like, haha, finish you off now, laser knife hand. And then Vegito goes, kabam! I fucking invented laser knife hand.
It's a laser sword hand, and his is bigger. And I was just like, ah, that's pretty cheap, and I like it.
Yeah, they're basically just absolutely relentless. Don't give Zamasu a chance. But unfortunately, they use all their power up.
I love the guy's explanation. He's just like, I guess they used up all their power for like an hour's worth of it. It's like, you said we'd have an hour. I figured, if we have an hour, then we have at least another episode out of this. I thought they were going to go somewhat real-world time on it, you know?
And Mai's brought Trunks' broken sword, and Trunks is like, it's my fight, I've got to finish this.
And so everyone claps their hands really hard.
And so they believe in fairies.
Yeah. And that fucking does it. And it's kind of like a spirit bomb sword. Which
yes.
Is
yeah.
Cool.
That's the idea, I think.
Except it's with hope.
Yes. And it's, it's every single living organism. Because I'm watching it a second time. It's like, oh yes, the energy's coming off the trees. And that tiny flower.
Frankenstein. Yeah.
He's Android number 3, I believe.
8, I think, isn't he? Android 8?
I don't know.
I forgot to mention
Frankenstein
in the last episode. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
future Android 8. He now has a separate page on the Dragon Ball Wiki to distinguish him from the Dragon Ball earlier version.
Fucking brilliant.
He went to go live in peace at a mountain somewhere in the end.
Oh, dear. And I did like Goku and Vegeta were the slowest on the uptake. Everyone on the planet was giving their energy, and Goku and Vegeta was like, oh, shit, we should do it too.
Oh, yeah. Remember this whole thing? Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And he slices that fucker in half.
Yep. Mm. Right up the crotch.
Yes. I did particularly appreciate that.
So that seems to do it. And based off the next episode preview, that did it. It's not that, will he come back? It's like, pretty much, no, he's fucked.
Yeah, it's just a question of exactly, because it looks like the King of All is in next week's episode.
He's going to be either pissed or wanting to fuck around.
Yeah, it's like, it depends where he's appearing, because the way they cut it makes it look like he's appearing in the future.
That'd be bad.
You'd be doing how much time traveling?
Been very, very naughty boys.
I have liked the way they've kind of went with it, that it's technically all of Trunks' fault, but the reason why he did it was for, you know, good reasons to try and save people and shit.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, he's at fault, but he's not wrong. It's kind of one of those weird situations.
Yeah, but, you know, if all the gods in this universe are dead now, what's that going to do for the cosmic order?
It means science will take the fore.
Yeah. My other favourite bit of the episode is when that's Trunks' light, and then they see the light coming off the two little kids as well. And Yajirobe's like, are you Trunks too? And then it starts coming off here. It's like,
and he freaks out, yeah.
Are we all Trunks now?
Got inside ourselves.
Dear.
But yeah, I just wonder whether that's like the specific thing about being a Saiyan human hybrid is your body works in you're able to channel other people's ki a lot freer.
Okay, I just figured it's because he was the hope of the world or something.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether they're going to use that as an explanation of why Pan's so powerful, is the fact that she was okay. used to summon a Super Saiyan god in the womb.
So presumably she was a Super Saiyan fetus, yeah, yeah. Oh, dear.
She was saving the world before
she was born. Yeah, yeah. Good point.
But yeah, this was a good episode. It ends very abruptly, but it's
yeah,
kind of
but everything's going to get probably wrapped up next week.
Yeah, I was going through some stuff to make the end of year quiz, and there was a story I missed like right at the start of the year where Toriyama was saying how he wished Dragon Ball Super was better. So I assume after he made that quote, that was the point at which it got better.
Okay, you're talking like back when we basically dropped it.
Yeah, probably like some point during the Frieza thing. But
yeah, I think the like we said, the thing about those is just watch the movie and then get back into the show once that arc is over. That seems to be the best way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, because it's definitely not had the problems that first arc had in terms of quality, production quality.
Okay.
Has it? There's been nothing as bad as some of those shots during the first 13 or so episodes.
No, I mean, like, the animation slipped a little, but it's been either reasonably good or fucking excellent like it was this week's one. Yeah, yeah.
Pretty good.
Okay, on to the shorts. First up, Bono Bono, episode 19, The Sights Inside Me. And I'm going to mute myself while I cough.
Yeah. I actually watched this one... a little while back now, as in not this week, and it's kind of skipping me what happened now. I basically talk about dreams, and I was just how when you were kind of when you're talking about something to somebody, how you can explain what it's like, but everyone would picture it just a little bit differently. I kind of liked how it was conveying that to kids.
Yeah, the idea that especially like obviously it's contrasted best when Bono's describing his dream to Chipmunk, and then they're both seeing kind of the same thing, but not quite.
Yeah,
yeah, because Chipmunk's seeing it like coloured in with crayons.
Exactly. Yeah, his imagination is crayons.
And then they go looking for this dream landscape.
Because it seems to be a very specific place that Bono's dreaming of.
And they keep on finding places.
That was his question, wasn't it?
Yeah, they keep on finding like places a little bit like it, but not quite. And Chipmunk thinks it's something he might have seen when he was younger. And then the final shot is them deciding to give up and go and play. And then you get this long shot over the sea to another coast where we do see the thing.
Exactly that, yeah. So it could be where he originally came from is the suggestion or something like that. It's nice.
It's a nice episode.
Yeah.
And Chipmunk bullies somebody this episode as well.
Well, he's giving off to Bono for just, you know, jumping in the water.
There's the octopus. He's doing absolutely nothing. There's an octopus in the cave. Chipmunk just goes and beats it up. Just sitting around.
Return to the ocean, octopus. This is not your place to be.
So that's why don't bully people. They turn into bullies themselves. Next up, Shonen Ishibe, Go Go Gomachan, episode 22, Yumikun's Family Secrets, which are I Can't Make Cookies and I Do Ballet.
I think that's the most of the secrets.
Yeah, so Yumikun is the, I don't know, how would you describe him, like the generic normal kid at school?
The boy that...
Or is he?
The boy that isn't essentially mute, isn't Ishibe, and isn't the bullies, and the bully's brother.
Yeah. And his mum's a famous actress.
She's on soaps that she's constantly watching.
Yeah, and they're trying to hide the fact that she's made some terrible cookies and that he does ballet from Ishibe and Mao, who've come round to play games. Mm. And Gomachan keeps on discovering the secrets, but obviously can't explain it to people and also doesn't care, but also keeps on getting injured as they try to hide the secrets from them.
Yeah, I'm not sure why Gama was just going around with his eyes closed the whole time. I was like, dude, you're going to bump into fucking presses and shit. You don't know your way around.
Yeah, why do you keep doing that? Like,
stupid seal!
But his eyes are open as well. Like, can you not see that he's going to like crawled straight into the wall if he keeps going the way he goes.
Maybe he's just assuming the layout of his own home or something.
Yeah, Shibe does the anime mum trick of switching off a console mid-game.
I was like, you can't do that these days, dude. You do some damage.
Well, it looked like it was quite an old console they were playing.
Yeah.
They were playing some sort of football game where the players moved extremely slowly.
Hey, man, it's a classic, you know. Retro gaming is back in.
It wasn't sensible soccer, that was for sure.
I thought it was somewhat like sensible soccer. But
sensible soccer's thing was it's super fast. Whereas,
Yeah,
because Shibe, of course, being the good child, the child who behaves like the ideal child,
wants to go out and play soccer.
Yes.
Yeah. What a great kid. And the other kid's trying to, because he's actually finally winning against, what's the...
Mao.
He's finally winning against Mao, who's really good at sensible soccer, slow version. He's trying to hide the ballet shoes with his foot.
Yes.
And trying to get Ashiba to stop looking at his photo album while playing the video game.
Oh, my secret's blown to win. Oh, what do I do?
Yeah. But then at the end, of course, a cookie gets taken home, and also they leave Mao Chan at the house while Mao Chan is left alone.
Well, I presume his parents were going to pick him up later or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think they just forgot him. I think that was the joke.
Okay.
And then they go back inside, and there he is wearing the ballet shoes.
And spinning around.
Spinning around.
Also found out that Mao Chan is completely two-dimensional.
And yet still better animated than Gakuin Handsome.
Pretty good episode.
Yeah,
all
it's jokes. Lots of jokes.
Mm.
It was fun stuff. And it was nice to spend some time with some other characters.
Another family situation.
Yes.
I suppose it was good to know that Yuma, he has a bit more depth than that, because he seems like this very polite, standard, boilerplate, like, friend character, because he's trying to keep up that facade.
Yes.
No one can know. He's actually dark secrets. Well, not even dark secrets. Just, you know,
no. And of course, Ashima would not care. Mao would not care.
Yeah. He's kind of missed the point there, that his friends are actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and Sugao is stuck in the wilderness, as they often are.
Oh, yes.
His life is terror.
Oh, my God. He needs to grow up and just move away from his parents.
Well, there was a manga sequel where they are a little bit older.
Okay.
I don't know whether he moves away from his parents. But...
Was his life still the ever-living horror that it seems
I don't
to
know.
Yeah, because he grew up to be like a deadbeat who gets involved in gambles and forces further burn to death.
Yes.
This is how he's always been. He's been always the suffering pariah, the ultimate survivor.
That fan art is definitely on Pixiv.
I bet it is. Up in the mean streets.
Oh, my other favourite gag in this episode was the cutaways to different versions of the soap opera with different characters as the mum's role. So you've got Gomachan in one and the dad in another one right at the end.
Well, just them in a wig, essentially, yeah.
Yes, I think it's every time they eat one of the cookies, isn't it?
Yeah, because she's trying to express sadness or something, it's the sadness of eating her horrible cookies.
Yes.
Okay.
On to the most violent show we watched this week, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master Episode 7. In the center of Okehazama, Yoshimoto yells, in which the payoff of the cuteness of the character designs comes in droves this episode as it becomes really realistic, well, cartoonishly violent and realistically violent.
When a dude gets cut open, he's dead.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, there were gouts of blood being sprayed everywhere.
And our main character, who is drawn as a cute little girl, bleeding out of her forehead. Because she only just managed to stop an arrow piercing her skull.
Yeah, and this is just after she is slaughtered by 20 men, in a single flurry of sword sweeps.
So I'm guessing this is based off an actual historical battle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought it was important to watch this before Drifters so I can get a better idea of Nobunaga's tactics.
So it's basically the end of Yoshimoto, isn't it?
Mm.
He carks it this episode. And then before he dies, though, he's annoyed that his double has actually been mistaken for him, even though he's a giant fat man.
I felt kind of bad for that guy. He was seen lying pissed, his back bleeding out of his guts. It's like, oh.
Yes, because you think at first it's just a character who's there for the gag of being an unsuitable double.
And he's just like, I'm not that fucking fat, okay? But yeah, I know that guy served his purpose as a double and got his ass killed. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was a good episode because it took me by surprise. Well, not even though it is bloody in the opening, I wasn't expecting it to be like dedicated the entire episode to just carnage. And then when they tell her Chidori to go home, she's got some. But first of all, take that arm off your sword.
Oh dear!
And it turns out Hideyoshi's skill in combat is being able to take a lot of attack blows rather than actually be good at fighting.
I did like that was like the kind of cutaway to, it's like, oh, he's got a special ability too. He walks in, he kind of walks back out just beating the shit out of it. It's like, pretty impressive. He thought it was going to be like a special move.
Yes.
Because your man comes in and she's really impressed with his spear.
Yes.
Isn't it? Yeah. Literally, not figuratively or anything.
No, because he thinks he's going to get a compliment on his looks or something, isn't it? And
Or saving her.
Chivalry.
Or something.
Chivalry, yeah. His...
Yeah, yeah.
But no, he's just got a really impressive spear. Okay, on to, well, we might as well do the other one, Drifters.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
Men of Destiny, episode 6. This kind of, oh, it's 7, isn't it? Is it 6 or 7?
I thought it was 7, but no.
I could be wrong. Men of Destiny might be like, no. I know we watched the problem is there's an episode today which you haven't watched yet.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Because 4 was the planning, 5 was the actual Elf Revolution, and then 6 was the fallout from that. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, the one today is 7. Yeah, so that's second guessing my own brain. So we get some more explanation of the Oort Empire, but the first thing is kind of like the fallout from the end of last week's episode of taking care of these degenerate humans who've been raping the elves, and Toyohisa wants to order the elves to murder them. But Nobunaga's like, no. You think he's going to stop him from murdering them?
Yeah. But
no, he just wants to be the one to take responsibility for all the bad things that they're doing.
Yeah.
I want you to be like a king and shit, dude. I got to do the bad shit. That's what I do.
You've got
to
be pure and upstanding. You got to be the poster boy for this new kingdom we're going to found.
Which, again, feels like more dad stuff. Him never having the chance to see his own son through to being a leader. He's gonna forcibly make this other guy fill in that role even though he denied it earlier. He also just spares a bit at Toyohisa's battle mania. They keep one of the humans alive, the nerdiest,
because the nerdiest guy said, I just got here yesterday. Kind of thing. It's like, yeah.
What other notes have I got here? Yes, we've got the Oort Empire. There's this this giant portrait of Hitler, who Nobunaga...
It's like, what a weird mustache!
It could be any guy with that mustache. You don't know.
Do you know Oort is the... What is it? That's German for land, isn't it, or something? Place, or... I thought it was town, but now I'm questioning it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not.
So I think they mistranslated Hitler. It's like, where what do we call this place? What, this land? And it's like, oh, we call it Oort then. Cool.
Yeah, that could well, because obviously he probably had to learn the languages and not have the seals that the other guys have been given.
Well, at least we know Hitler won't be showing up anytime soon.
Well, yes, because we learned that apparently he committed suicide.
Yeah.
But also around, as part of the Oort Empire, is Count Saint Germain. Who apparently has been here the longest?
Because they say he's like he funded the thing, but he's still around and still
looking young.
And they're all kind of worried about how young he.
Which is obviously the myth of the character being immortal.
Yeah.
In our world, and he basically has realized that your empire, the empire is doomed.
I like the way he walked into the room. Was like, hey, what's all this shit going on here? Look, we're losing supply lines here. We're being cut off here. They're coming back. They're coming back. We're going to get our asses kicked. Okay, gotta go, bye. He realizes as he got there.
Yeah, so I assume he's going to be switching sides at some point, or at least trying to form some alliance with the Drifters.
Or play both sides, even, yeah.
Yeah, because we also learn that the Empire's being attacked from another flank by, what's it, like a merchant group?
Oh, it's a merchant fleet or something.
Yeah, but being attacked, their ships are being attacked by guys riding giant attack ravens who are part of this merchant guild or something.
Yeah, and they have this weird catchphrase.
They do.
Yeah. Where did they pick that up from, I wonder?
Well, we learn from this Japanese guy on a giant ship.
Yeah, he says, all right, when we bomb them, right, you got to say Tora, 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 Tora. We don't know how many times, we just say it. All right, it'll be fine.
Yeah, those guys, they reminded me of Duval's guys out of One Piece.
Oh, yeah, flying food.
Okay. I could see that. And they had the cool, like, piratey kind of hats as well. Yes. And also, you see the fucking, I was going to say aircraft carrier, but I guess it's like fucking giant raven carrier.
Yeah, I assume that's the Yamato.
Yeah.
Dry docks, because obviously it's just him, apparently, none of his crew. You get to bring your boat, but you get nobody to operate it.
Captain was now with the ship.
Yeah, I suppose that.
I think you might be on something there. And I assume that'll be another part of the storyline, is somebody, them trying to train people to get that ship up and running.
Because this is a campaign I really want to get involved in.
Because the big thing in this episode is also Oda wanting to, is it fix his gun or make more guns?
He wants to make more guns, but the elf said, we don't have good enough craftsmen. Maybe the dwarves. He's like,
that's
dwarves,
the one thing they're good for, those useless dwarves.
Well, yeah, the elves would be like that. Yes. And the other guy's trying to teach him swordplay, but it's like, they're really into archery, dude. Yes.
And also the elves think Yuichi's really handsome. And he's like, no, I'm the ugliest of all my brothers.
They're so beautiful, you wouldn't even know. Well, that, and he's doing the thing of splitting arrows to show how good he is. They're like, dude, you're just wasting arrows.
You're a poor tribesman.
And then at the end of the episode, here come the French.
Dastardly fiends. Yeah.
Was there anything else? It was another scattershot episode of lots of little bits.
Lots
of things
setup
happening.
And setup kind of things, world building. Yeah. Yeah. I think the only other bit was, or the other major bit, was the bit in the corridor where you see your one, she doesn't read a newspaper, she gets, like, I guess, news updates on her laptop. That kind of way. Oh, and we actually see how the news shows up on his paper as well. Isn't that this episode?
Yeah, I think it's this episode as well, yeah.
It's the print kind of arranging itself into the global news, Nobunaga takes something, something, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If I had a knock against it, I'd say, like, no, what? Again, this is something that is just in the comic. They're just going to put it in there because this is the way it is. Why is the Constitution being going to be that way, man? Why still happened this in the year of our Lord 2016?
Okay, as Drifter's taken care of, on to what should we do next? I'm trying to think what to finish with. What was the best thing? Let's finish with Bungo Stray Dogs.
Oh, I thought you wanted to finish with Yuri, but let's see.
Let's go with Time Bokan 24, Episode 7. What Columbus discovered was not a new continent, but a new exercise called gymnastics. that's the plot covered. But first sighting of anime Donald Trump in this episode.
Mm. But he's not actually in a TV show. He's a fictional character
in their
world. Fictional character in a fictional show, which is better than our reality.
Jack Bauer would never agree to work for that man.
I bet he would.
I think I gotta agree with him. I think
24 was made 24 was made by Fox, so
that's fair. I think a good idea for a sequel to 24 would be 48. I think that's actually pretty good. You get a longer series. It's good.
But then that could be like a TV series based on the movie 48 Hours. Who was the old guy? He's not Gary Busey. It's
Nick Nolte.
Nick Nolte, that's it.
Yeah, but that's only like, I wonder whether they had two versions of that or whether they animated it right up to the deadline.
That's impressive if they managed to just push it out.
Or whether they were just going to go for Donald Trump anyway. But yes, it's kind of like a little nod to current affairs, particularly in what Shigeru Chiba's saying in the narration. But then it moves on to the plot of going back in time and finding out what was up with Columbus. And Columbus was apparently a guy who was really into new things. That was, and also saying the word Colum at the end of every sentence.
Which to me sounded like he was saying the name Colum.
Yeah, me too.
All the time.
dear.
And so in an attempt to prevent him from discovering gymnastics and instead finding America, the bad guys accidentally make him discover gymnastics.
Yeah, they keep mentioning that. It's like, dude, that looks like gymnastics. It's like, shut up.
Well, the whole deal was that one, that Bimajo, she somehow manages to do something or say something that leads to the true history being realized to begin with. And it starts off, she shows up in her regular costume, and it's like, that's an interesting costume you got there. Maybe I should wear something like that. And it's like, but no, no. Oh, it's too late. You already ruined it.
Yeah. And he just keeps coming up with more fruit. Like, he appears to be just a complete lunatic and his crew just running around trying not to get killed. Because he throws away all the maps because they're old things and not new things.
Mm.
Isn't that the...
Well, they expressed relief at the end and said, men, we've found a new thing. Let's go back home. They're like, oh, thank God we didn't die on this journey.
It does make the question, who did discover America in this world?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, people did discover the America
before he did.
Yeah.
Long before he did.
What was your man's name? St. Bernard?
It was St. Columbanus. St. Brendan.
Brendan, that was it. Okay.
I thought it was your fella who they celebrate on SpongeBob, the Viking.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Leif Erikson.
Yeah. Yes.
Probably. If Vinland Saga, another popular Japanese comic book, is anything to go by.
It's Leif Erikson Day.
Hooray. One thing I was wondering why that it didn't seem to do, because they had things to do with. Like, so, the Marjouan company, they scan things around because a pirate ship comes by and it's like, all right, mateys. And they scan that and made it into a robot, a big robot, pirate robot.
Mm.
I know that the Mecha Vuitton has a pirate cosplay docking thing. Why didn't they do that and have pirate versus pirate?
Because it's roulette. It's always random, Niall.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. Oh, no, a salary man again. That's 3 weeks in a row.
It would be ruining the illusion if they got one suitable for the actual situation.
Yeah.
It's okay, I got a samurai instead, so we can get, you know, that all interargument of samurais versus pirates, who would win.
But it was a fine episode. Nothing, it hasn't reached its peak again yet, but it was a good way to spend some time.
It hasn't got up to the strength of that
caveman episode.
Caveman one. That was something else.
Okay, now it's time for Brian's Haybot report. This week, he went back and tried to fight his dad again, but his dad had already been beaten by somebody else. His dad was deliberately trying to fix the fight by lowering the level on his robot until it was like minus 200,000 levels, by deliberately screwing in bad screws into its head. So he had to go and fight the guy who'd stolen his dad's screws. He found the guy, beat him. It turned out this guy's part of a legendary quartet of Voka battlers, who we saw the silhouettes of, and one of which looks like the woman who time travelled in the very first episode. This guy also looks a bit like the bad guy in the very first episode. Then it turns out, after they've gone, that this other guy had also screwed... He'd taken all the bad screws from the king and had screwed them into his own robot, so they'd actually beaten a robot who was absolutely useless as well, but they weren't aware of it. They thought they'd achieved something, but actually they hadn't. But they had got a new screw. And then right at the end, the future Neji, or whatever his name... Was he Man Driver from the very first episode? Time-travelled, but... Time travels to the current day. Again, I'm not entirely sure whether he's traveling from the future or the past.
Right.
And I'm sure the main characters won't be either. At one point, they just stopped and say this show said this show goes off on a lot of tangents, so don't bother listening. When it started about to go off on yet another tangent. Anyway, it was Haybot. It was back after a week off. No one is commenting on it anymore in Crunchyroll. So possibly I'm the only person watching. I don't know.
Shouting into the void.
But there's glimpses here of some sort of plot. Again, every so often it gives you a glimpse of there's something bigger going on. There's been 3 votes for it, so I'm not the only one watching. I didn't vote for it yet, so there's at least four of us. And those 3 votes have all voted 5 stars. So if you're on board 7 FSS into Haybot, you're fully on board. How's Flip Flappers looking?
Let's see. You guys didn't talk about it, bring it up the last time, did you?
We briefly did. Dwayne said he was getting more and more disillusioned with it, I think.
The episode that the second and most recent episode, I thought it was good because it was an okay, because there's actually some kind of meaningful. Some kind of like meaningful reason behind all of these like journeys into fantasy that they're doing, because one of them was tied into the memories of their classmate, who was the art class
senpai.
Girl.
I can't remember her name because she just kept calling senpai.
Yeah, but then it seems that that their foray into there seems to have dumped something into her personality, because now she seems to be less interested in her art and she's been kind of just giving it up altogether and thinking, she could be saying, so there actually is real world consequences for what they're doing in there. And then it seems to sort of put all that to one side while they, I guess, journey into Kokona's maybe inherent desires for our regular school life, because you just see her go through her day where there's no one else in town except herself and Papika, who turns up in a variety of school anime cliches, like the like the kind of geeky classmate and the kind of tough local boy with the kind of Josuke style pompadour.
That was probably my favorite bit, because that bit also kind of dragged on. It's like, yeah, okay, I like Papika as the school tough, even though there's no one else in town. Yeah, it was. It was kind of amusing, but the rest of it was kind of like, yeah, like you say, going through the tropes.
It's kind of saying, okay, it's trying to go for something here, but I felt like there was a thread wanting to be pulled with that whole your actions have consequences in the real world when you go into these places. Thing that they didn't pull on,
and they didn't even like logically go through it. It's like your one generally keeps to herself and sticks to the art class and does art but doesn't feel worthy to do art, but now she's actually really outgoing and happy and smiling all the time, and it's like, have you met her better, have you met her worse? We're not discussing any of those issues, forget it, this is the plot of the episode. And that it still kind of bugs me. It's like, oh, there's something more to this, but I'm not going to tell you now. I'm like, fucking show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I was kind of feeling when the rival magical girl team, they see Kokona just wistfully sitting by riverside, staring off in the sunset, and like kind of, well, we've got our things, let's just get the hell out of here, leave her to do it. Yeah, I was kind of getting that feeling myself. Now, it seems like maybe things will sort of kind of start maybe getting into gear fucking 7 episodes in. Because now Yayaka has been locked out of any interaction with the upper echelons of whatever group she's working for. She hasn't got security clearance now, but the other two do. She's going, what the fuck's going on here? And there's a guy on a laptop hiding from those guys, and he's in the same meadow where Kokona and Papika are hanging out, and Papika gets some kind of memory back about some person called Mimi. Again, it's all very vague things that,
yeah, they just keep making us like, this is a mystery we'll eventually get around to, presumably. I don't fucking know. And that kind of, like, that is starting to irk me now, because it's not, you need to start answering some of those questions you set up. And then you can, answer them with more questions. But it's more so, it's just like, we'll get around to that. And I feel kind of like I'm being dicked around with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll keep with it because I'm this far end of it, so. It's not that I've been completely put up, and I can understand why anybody would have dropped it long ago. But I'll stick with it. If anything of note occurs, I'll let you know.
Right.
Righty-ho. Back onto things we've all watched. Well, maybe we haven't. I don't know. Tiger Mask Double, Episode 7.
Yep.
Naoto and Naoto. This was a recap of what happened in the original Tiger Mask series, for anyone who might have missed it.
Just in case you know, there was an older Tiger Mask. Did you know that? I mean, like, we've kept saying it this entire fucking show.
And also, just in case. An attempt to convince an old person within the show to like the new Tiger Mask.
And to get a new fan on board.
Yes.
the cranky granddad and his daughter.
Yes.
He's into wrestling, but he's not. Doesn't know about this new Tiger Mask.
Yes.
Actually, I think he thinks it's the old Tiger Mask initially, isn't it?
I can't remember. I wasn't paying all that much attention to this episode, I have to admit.
That's all right.
Tiger the Dark also became the champion of
WWF.
Yes. I can never remember what the initials are because it is just the WWF.
It's Global Wrestling Monopoly.
That's it. Yeah. Which seems to have all its shows in Madison Square Garden.
I love that bit with Tiger the Dark winning the shit because your man's has basically been demoted. Big Boss Man or whatever the fuck his name is.
He's just called Boss Man. But
it's just Boss Man, sorry.
Yeah, but the design is Ivan Koloff.
Yeah. His friends, what are Tiger the Dark's friends' names? It's like Kevin and fucking something else.
Yeah,
really they're boring.
They're basically like the young boys of the bad guys.
It's Kevin and fucking Johnny. I don't goddamn know. They got the most plain names. They're really excited for him. And he's like, hey guys, thanks for as much as he can being the angry guy. And I love when all the other wrestlers run over to him. They're like, oh, are they going to bum rush him? And it's like, no, they're all really like, hey, you're the champion now. That's great. You know, they're all actually really nice about it for once.
Mr. X appears as well this episode explaining.
But he's not actually Mr. X. He's another Mr. X.
Well, yeah, because he says Mr. X died. When the old Tiger Mask brought us down before.
Yeah.
But yes, but I am also Mr. X, voiced by the same guy who was playing that Mr. X who died.
I might also wear a monocle, but I'm a different Mr. X. There's a cracked monocle on the mantle next to the top hat. different guy.
Right.
Oh, dear.
I can't quite tell what's going on there, because I can't. Because there seems to be like different levels of villainy going on within the bad guy organization.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if there's another secret organization of villainous bad guys.
Yes, because obviously there's the guy they're trying to find, and he hasn't shown up yet. So.
Yeah, he's Yellow Devil or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still AWOL.
And who's in the match? That we get like a tag team match.
It's the guy who runs the Japan wrestling.
Is it Nagata and Tiger Mask against Okada and Yoshihashi?
I think so. I've forgotten the other two guys' names. Yeah. One of the older guy and the younger guy. I guess because they're both old guy, young guy teams.
So it's just a match. Get another match in to get this old man excited about watching New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Also, those guys, it is just a regular match. There's no stakes. No one's trying to murder anyone in the ring in this case. But that dude is fucking hitting people with a pipe. Referee, where are you in this fucking thing?
Where this world was is very he? Where's referee when your master got crippled in the first episode?
Well, if you watch New Japan Pro Wrestling, their referees aren't very effective at keeping foreign objects out of the ring. Not that there's a lot of that, but they're not very good at disqualifying people, let's say that.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot of leniency going on. Yeah. I think it was Yoshihashi. It's like it's not a pipe, it's his Son Goku staff.
That's it, yeah. Because it has the ball on the end. Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. And we learned a little bit more about selling product.
Yes. Well,
at least you have to deliver it to the location so she can sell it. Oh, dear.
It felt a bit like a filler, but obviously a filling in episode if you weren't aware of
the
original Tiger Mask. Yeah, so it's like a weird thing of, like, let's get young kids, even though we're airing this at 2:30 in the morning, interested in what the old Tiger Mask was like, and let's get old men even though this is airing at 2:30 in the morning, they're probably more likely to be off at that time. Or probably just getting up. So check out this new Tiger Mask. Maybe go and check out the current New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of show itself.
Yes.
Please watch Japan Wrestling.
Subscribe now. First 6 months, half price.
Yes.
Yeah, still enjoyable, though.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite behind where you guys are at in it, but I think it is my kind of program.
Episode 4 is the highlight so far, I would say.
That's the Red Mask, isn't
yes.
it? Yes. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting into that one.
So it's like me just saying that's the highlight, and you knew exactly which episode, fight it would be, because that's so such the standout fight.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you get any of that kind of quality, if we get any of that coming up, then it's totally worth watching. That was a really good one, yeah.
Yeah. Lovely and brutal. Right, so let's see. Let's do the other sport then. Yuri on Ice, Episode 7. China's on, the Grand Prix Series opening event. The Cup of China Free Skate.
Did that fit in the title?
It did. It did all fit in. The only one which didn't fit in this week was Time Vocab.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's the entire episode described, I suppose.
It was, yes. To be fair, it is every week. But at least that one was more obvious. The one with the B was like, what the hell? How is this going to happen? Yeah, so it was more ice skating. And crying. And again, it was a situation where I came to this like a day late, and so I'd already seen all the people reacting on Twitter.
Oh, I just avoided Twitter.
Going, well, this episode is really... they really put layer on the homosexuality this week. I was like... And when I came at it, I was like, oh, I think you're... I mean, it's there, but I think you're amplifying it a lot bigger than it is.
Yeah,
it's teasing it a lot. It's still a tease, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, those dudes definitely kissed, but we didn't see it, so I'm guessing they want to do
also,
that as, like, a bigger reveal.
But also, Dwayne, the following cut suggests they didn't kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. it's an odd one, like...
It was like wanted to have its cake and eat it. It was like, we really made you think they kissed this time.
Yeah, see, I'm wondering if they're going to actually, like, keep the showing of that, showing of a kiss, like, till later on, like, really fucking build towards that.
Yeah, because it almost seemed, because of the voiceover, the internal monologue of Victor this episode, if it is a kiss, I'm not sure it's a romantic kiss, because he's manipulating him at the start of this episode.
Yeah.
In a way that he doesn't really understand how he should be doing it.
It's like, a lot of this kind of thing is Victor being not, well, inexperienced as a trainer.
Yes, I think that's exactly what a lot of what this episode is, as much as it's about Yuri.
Like, I wouldn't say the gayness is not there. I think that
no, it's definitely
silly.
There.
It is there.
It is definitely there, but at the same time, I don't think a romantic kiss is deserved in this episode based on how Victor was manipulating him.
Because the kind of episode is Yuri is really freaking out.
Yes.
That everyone's fucking giving it their all. Like, and obviously they are. Like, they all want to do well in it. We even get to see is it the Chinese skater? Because he didn't qualify in the first top five, but he was still in with a shot.
But there's definitely bits of throughout the episode, isn't there, with the other coaches and how they're some of them are emotionally manipulating their people.
Yeah, yeah, how they interact with their with who they're training. But with Victor, it's kind of like he thinks that Yuri's broken, but this is just how Yuri reacts to stress.
But he's like, all these like figure skaters are so fragile. What if I just break his heart? Which he then does, and then gets a reaction that he wasn't expecting. Which then ties into the fact that his former coach earlier on has pointed out that he's inexperienced himself, and he doesn't really know how to coach people properly.
Yeah, we've been seeing a lot of him doing pretty good by proxy or accident, seemingly. But I mean, like, some of it genuinely good coaching, but he still doesn't really know. He knows how to skate, not how to make someone else skate, how to inspire someone else. even though he's already done that a little bit with Yuri. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
But it kind of worked, though.
It does, it kind of works. But at the same time, he got lucky.
He got, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, a lot of his techniques for training them seems to be kind of like, you either did that by accident or you're fucking lucky that he didn't break under that kind of thing. Yeah.
Often it's better to be lucky than good.
It's also interesting that the guys who won and came third didn't seem to be manipulated by their coaches as much as...
No, their coaches were just really confident in them.
Yes.
Kind of like confident and there for them. That kind
yeah,
of
it's
thing.
Like Pitchett, he's the...
The Thailand
guy. Yeah.
Because you got some monologue of his coach, but his coach just seemed to understand him. You didn't necessarily see him manipulate him, and obviously the is it Chris, the Swiss guy?
Yeah.
And we don't.
His coach, they just kind of embrace. It's like, yeah,
yes,
good job, man.
We've not had any inner monologue from him, or necessarily like the weight of China's on your shoulders, like the Chinese guy's coach tells him just before he's about to start.
I think that's why he kind of like does his best. And
yes,
really
it is.
Up,
yeah.
But he fails essentially. But he doesn't step up.
Yeah, but I think you mentioned that the music he's dancing to for his free set here. I don't even know what this is. Just my coach really wanted to do it, so I'm going to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. He's in a very similar place to where Yuri was with his coach, not making a choice as to what he wanted to do, what he wanted to express. And he's a younger skater, so it makes sense. He's kind of in the place Yuri was.
Yeah, it was a good episode, and I think Pitchett got the best of the animation of ice skating this episode.
They've improved the CG animation a little bit. There's a lot more weight to their jumps and everything, which is nice.
Oh, it was better this time. I noticed here a lot more than in previous sessions is that they have the skaters animated as skating the ice, and then they kind of have the camera rotating and the background moves around them. Mm. They at least had different takes of that, the rink would move around them in a different way. Or I think in previous episodes they would use the same one for every shot. It rotates around the same part of the same side of the rink, and then it would go back to just do it again, the same side of the rink rotating over again.
Yeah.
It was really, it's here that they put a bit more variety into it, so it seemed like a little less noticeable.
But also, they also occasionally didn't do any ice skating at all and did a pseudo version of Infernal Affairs and Sleeping Beauty.
That was fucking awesome. I love that bit. It's like, oh man, that movie looks great.
That's good. For anybody who can't read the language of ice skating or figure skating, they can do this too. Here's what they're trying to convey to you.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about it, but it was like, oh, the Infernal Affairs type bit looked a lot different to anything we'd seen so far.
It's a different show, really.
Yeah. But even the animation style and the way it was coloured looked totally different to the world we're in.
I really enjoy the... I've forgotten the other Russian skater's name.
Yorgi.
Yorgi. I really like his bits because he's getting way too into it every time. And he's like, no, I'm not the Wicked Witch anymore. I'm fucking this other thing. And it's like, oh my God, dude.
That's his strength, though.
He's good at it. I'm not saying he's not good at it.
Yeah, because you think he's not going to do well when his ex gives him the thumbs down and walks out. No, he come back fourth overall by the end of it. He was third at that point.
He did pretty good, I think. He's great.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see any more of them, but obviously we're going to see a lot more of the top three.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting Yuri versus Yuri. It's coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the bit where Yuri goes, oh, I forgot to watch the long fall.
He just suddenly realizes, kind of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good show, even though it does never quite, when people start raving about it, it never quite ends up equaling what they seem to be raving about when I go and watch it. But it's still good in other ways.
Yeah, there's a reason I avoid the social media before I watch it.
Yeah, I knew when I heard waves being made about it, either it was really good or it was really bad.
Yes.
Okay.
But it turned out it was kind of in the middle, but mostly going towards the good. So
that's
all right. Although I will say, look, we've seen Two episodes in a row now of a flamboyant man, a skin-tight alpha, combing his pants while doing figure skating.
Yeah.
If you, and if you're convinced there's still not gay undertones to this, then...
Yeah, no, I mean...
Come on, who are you fooling?
Well, thank goodness he's wearing black.
Oh, dear.
Okay, next up, Classicaloid Episode 6, The Beginning of the Classicaloids.
Oh, it's the plot.
Guess again. If you think you're going to get an explanation this episode, you were wrong.
Yeah, you got a little bit. Something. I mean, like, my favorite bit was the false explanation at the start of it. It was like, I'm an evil scientist creating them for some fucking reason. I don't know. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's as much as I know. Sure.
That's kind of... That's kind of at the moment, seems to be, yeah, you just... Kind of did make him for a laugh.
Yes.
I presume there was a reason, but yeah.
Yeah, we don't get it this episode.
Maybe he was supposed to make killer androids, but he's like, aha, I'm going to make fucking Beethoven deal with it.
No, it seems to be. There seems to be some large corporation that wants to make, like, artificial humans, but they don't work. But they do work if you infuse the personalities and essence of classical composers into them. That's the only way that makes him work for some reason. We don't know why, but it just is the way it is.
Maybe he's the guy who made that that Leonardo da Vinci from Lupin.
Maybe.
I don't know. It seems kind of like something... That's the only logical thing I can think of as to why you would do this. Anyway.
Yeah, but what it really ends up as is can I getting mad at the Classicaloids again?
Yep, that seems to be pretty much every episode, though.
Yes, and it's kind of just treading over the same ground you kind of got over again already.
But I think that was the point this episode was. That was the specific point, because we ended up getting this cacophony of five different musics all being operated at once.
Oh, dear.
And then Back puts a stop to it with his own music. And he seems to react to her screaming as well. And also, has that woman got a name yet? The one who goes and tells them to...
Oh, the one with the glasses. I feel like she has a name, but I can't
remember. Stupid hair lady.
She's not on the wiki.
Well, she's not a classical composer.
I think. Or is she? No, don't think so. No.
Box manager.
Like, I loved her thing of, like, her going to the board of directors and going, like, check it out! It's fucking Bach. He could be your boss. And they're all like, really? I don't think that's a bad idea. That's a bad idea. And I was expecting Bach to come out with his regular fucking musical direction and not convince them at all. But he actually talks for once. So that's nice.
I think he still said some musical direction and then did his...
He did say some,
And then did his music.
And that convinced them.
That convinced them, yes.
Mm. But, yeah.
And basically the other two just decide they're going to stay out of it. Schubert shows up.
Oh, he's finally at the house. Yeah,
he is. Yep. Yeah, it doesn't seem to get noticed. Because when she's giving like a dressing down to everybody, he doesn't get mentioned.
He hasn't really done anything to her.
Well, no, he turned everyone into babies though.
That was helpful. It went well. Yeah. Okay.
What are they told to do? It's like, only make gyoza in the kitchen.
Don't wear your Heelys indoors.
Yeah.
Stop. She was struggling to find a thing for Lista. It was like, Lista, stop
hugging me
too much, I suppose.
Because Lista's actually quite...
Once you keep Lista around, because, you know, Lista's fucking...
He's the only one paying the rent,
bills, so, like, I was just going for it. So, if I'm trying to put my foot down, I've got to be firm with everybody, so I seem like a fair landlord. So I got to find it. Yeah. But don't be too familiar. You're fine, but don't just ease up in a little bit.
And just giving out to your man, because you don't fucking live here. Get out of this house. dear.
That woman is not on the official website, so...
Oh.
I don't know what... I mean, it seems to be that she's somehow important to the story, but...
I don't know. Box manager. other classical lawyers don't like her too much.
Yeah. And then next week it's something to do with the Mountain King. And as far as I know, we haven't had a Grieg Classical Lloyd show up, so I don't know whether they're going to suddenly spring more than these eight on us next week. But yeah, as you say, it was a lot of retreading of stuff which has happened already, but I think that was to get us to the point where everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, I suppose. It hasn't soured me on the show, but it has maybe slightly dampened my enthusiasm for it.
No, that's fair. I'm having kind of the same problem with Flip Flappers. But Flip Flappers appears to be going like, ooh, there's a mystery. Whereas Classical Lloyd is like, we're fucking around. We'll get to that shit eventually. Do you know what I mean? I think it's the kind of tone difference that I'm not having as much of a problem with it being slow to get to its point.
Yeah. If it seems to be like, you know, I'd be fine if we've Classical Lloyd was just about these guys in a big house just messing around with each other.
It has
this vague point that it maybe kind of wants to get there, but it doesn't want to get there. I'd be fine if it was one way or the other, but I feel like if it wants to just commit to one and just go for it.
I think that's what initially put me off the show. I was like, wait, are you going to get to the point? And then I was like, oh, you're just fucking around. All right, I'll just...
Yeah. I think it's just riffing on people's personality, the historical characters' personalities.
Yeah, in some sort of stereotypical way they get, yeah.
Which unfortunately then means sometimes you have to look up what were these people like? What are they getting at here? Yes, because I would not have got. I would have not known that Mozart was a pervert until the show.
Something that comes up often, I suppose. Yeah.
It's not, but apparently it was very much true. Yeah, there are letters to prove it. Some to his own mother.
Oh,
apparently him and his mother used to like sending scatological letters to each other.
Oh, that was really popular back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, just like who could write the dirtiest things to
him.
You gotta pass the time, there's no TV. They can't be making podcasts.
They can't be watching friggin' Haybot making poop jokes all the fucking time.
I bet Mozart would love Haybot.
Fucking love it. There's a robot that's constantly puking. What's not to love?
Yeah, and one who's constantly farting.
Yeah.
And he farts so hard he turns palaces into toilets, which he did again this week.
I see that performed at the Opera House in Austria, huh?
So I think the only thing we've got left now is Bungo Stray Dogs, episode 19, Will of Tycoon, in which we meet some people with some creepy powers.
Yeah, you were right about fucking Lovecraft's power not being nearly as creepy
as John Steinbeck's.
I mean, like, it's a cool power, don't get me wrong, but it's like, oh, Jesus, oh, just use my power, stab self in neck.
That is a giant seed in there, like, you can see the visible lump protruding under his skin, and then the vine comes out.
Yep.
Like, that's a really kind of gross, long-winded way to say I can control plants.
And it's kind of like it's like you're saying, Brian, it's like there's no way these people discovered these powers by accident. It's like, no, someone had to explain to you how your own powers work.
I fell into like a rose bush and like it got stuck in my neck and I almost died from, you know, my artery getting cut. But thankfully
a grape got lodged in there too.
And that's why I found out my life changed forever.
I mean, like Lovecraft, as far as I can tell, he's made of tentacles.
That seems
there's more to it than that, but
it's pretty standard. But I guess if it's going to be like a broad reading of what these artists are famous for, I guess that would be a big thing connected to him.
Yeah, and isn't there like a hint that his isn't an ability?
Yeah, your man's saying it's too powerful to be an ability, I think. The Doppel guy is saying,
I'd forgotten what the other guy's power was, and then
it's illusions.
It was, but it was great.
Oh man, that was like the best way to use that's like it's so simple but so like, oh, just brilliant. Hit him with a truck. And it was one of those things as well that where he's just using, you know, kind of good luck. It just so happened to be a guy passing at that stage. That kind of way.
But yeah, it was like kind of like how John Steinbeck was like, slowly realizing that that truck is not stopping.
It's like, doesn't he fucking see me in the road? Like,
because they're like worrying how they get what they're going to do, how they're going to explain what they're doing. And he's like, oh no, shit, he can't even see me.
And I like applications of the powers at that point. This thing, it seems like you can only use this in a very certain situation in a particular way, but actually you can apply it thus ways, you can do it that, and you get kind of more interesting outcomes than, oh, I can turn into a massive of tentacle monsters and attack you with that.
When your man, the Dapplebot, was disarmed by the vines, is like, I bet you're thinking you knocked away my gun. Ha ha! Pulls a piece of paper out of his pocket. It's like, this is also a gun. And it's like, you could have just also had a gun in there. You know, it's not the most creative use of his power that we've seen. Really, really good stuff this episode. Yeah, so I really enjoyed that opening as well.
Yeah, because they think they've saved the two girls, but then they run into Q. Yumenu Kyusaku, with his ability Dogra Magra. This creepy little boy who has apparently been unsealed.
As a creepy doll that can mind control you.
Yes.
If you hurt him? There was very specific rules of it, and I was just like, hold on.
Yes. Yeah. And he does a horrible thing to our hero, whose name I forget, the White Tiger Boy.
I figured that's exactly what was going on, but I was just waiting for the reveal.
Yeah, because he thinks the two staff have been mind-controlled, and so that they're attacking him, but it turns out he's been mind-controlled, and he's attacking them.
And they're really fucking traumatized, understandably. But yeah, that's pretty messed up. And obviously he kind of regresses into that thing he keeps having where it's like, you're useless, you only hurt the people around you. That big group of people,
It seemed like it could be that was just like a one-off thing related to his past and this is affecting who he is now. But I feel like because you can't actually see faces of people in that memory now, it's going to tie back into these whole inter-company warfare. Is there some kind of other company that's also got like a dog in this fight?
Well, that's the thing as well. Your man, his other opposite on the Port Mafia seems to have a similar kind of thing. So is there someone producing these kids or something like that? Oh, just a thought.
But at the end, they go, the other lady with the stand, what other word is it?
Yeah.
It's fine.
Agrees to help them find, Yalas.
Kyoka.
Kyoka, yeah. And then at the end,
she actually seems to want to save her all of a sudden.
Yeah. And then at the end, is it? It's F. Scott Fitzgerald confronts Atsushi.
Yeah. And
then she shows up.
To save him?
Yeah.
The only other thing I think is Dazai meeting up with that guy from the miniseries. Remember him?
Oh, yes. And they get hit.
Wow, that was so worth that build-up, wasn't it?
Yeah. It could have just been...
You really needed to know who he was.
Like, all he did was like, there's a guy from Dazai's past. You thought I wasn't mad at you anymore. It's like, hey, let's not kill each other now, buddy. You know, and I was like, that's as much as I needed to know.
Yep, that's it.
It's just some prick from Dazai's past. Whatever. He knows a lot of pricks.
like the most interesting reveal, about this whole episode was... That we needed a whole miniseries to build up to. It was that knife girl and the Port Mafia. A knife guy and Port Mafia is actually a knife girl, but you can't tell because he's wearing a mask.
Oh yes,
that was fucking brilliant. Yeah, and she has a really cute voice. Who knew? Yeah, it's that weird thing where, like, when you said that was a guy on the train, I was like, oh yeah, that was a little boy, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty sure, because I'm pretty sure the authors.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed this one. It feels like the show again. It feels like the show again, and it's kind of like, weirdly enough, the prior series, it was always like the armed detective guys were generally in control of the situation, but in this one there's a lot more danger kind of present, you know?
Yes, yeah. It feels much more chaotic.
Yeah.
Like, you're not quite sure who could win out of this three-way fight.
Mm.
Yeah, the fact that obviously, yeah, and also the fact they've released this kid, who apparently the Port Mafia were so scared of, they sealed him away in the first place. It's like, in order to win this, they've got to unleash this thing, which is probably going to backfire on them, even if they're the winners.
They're just kind of, well, I mean, that's been their plan so far, just sowing chaos between everyone else and seeing what pieces don't get killed.
Yeah, because you've got to assume that Dazai must have been responsible for helping them seal him away because he had the power to cancel that kid's powers.
Yeah, and it's like,
how are they going to seal him away now? Dazai's on the opposition.
They haven't thought this through.
But they kind of want Dazai to come back, don't they? Did they mention something like that? This
I think they gave him the offer of, like, hey, come on back. And he's like, no. That's stupid. Yeah. He doesn't react very well to it. I guess because they're not really offering him anything.
No.
It's kind of like, do you want to join up with us again?
Yeah, which I suspect he's just like, can you please join up with us again? We've released this horrible thing into the world.
Maybe that's why they want him to join up, because he's the only guy who can put him away. Yeah.
It's like, they have to come back, because otherwise this thing is going to, like, kill everybody you love, no one care about now, and your other little family you've made up yourself.
Mm.
Yeah, it was a good episode, and yes, as you say, it's Bungo Stray Dogs again.
Mm. Hooray!
Well, at least we take solace in that a lot of the action direction, they could have saved up some time and save it for these episodes.
Yeah.
Ooh. Like, what's going to happen with F. Scott Fitzgerald and that sushi, and then Kyoko shows up again. It's like, something's going to happen here. Maybe nothing will happen, because it's too early on in the series for it to be a big showdown with F. Scott Fitzgerald just yet, but could be something cool happening there in a minute.
Yeah,
I assume it's just going to deal with these guys this season, and then I think they're probably going to have to wait for some more chapters to build up before they can make any more.
Yeah, before we get the European authors.
Yeah, I think they've only just started appearing in the comic.
Okay, yeah. I was wondering if they go European, or do they actually separate it up by country?
There's like a European group and a Russian group.
Oh, Russian okay, group.
Okay.
Hmm.
I thought they're all
Eastern and Western Europe. Okay.
But they're all folded into each other, okay.
Yeah, because there was like, we saw Dostoevsky and Agatha Christie, because they were like on the other ends of the line with F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Okay. Hmm.
Yeah, I think they're all part of the same organisation, but they're in separate...
A different part of the guild, yeah.
And I'm not even sure they're also called the guild. I think they're called different things. So the guild itself might be part of a larger thing.
Speaking of the larger things, what was the deal with that fucking guy with the glasses name, who I refuse to remember, that was talking to Dazai? It's like he's supposed to take care of this kind of superpowered person stuff, but he doesn't have the authority or some shit. So presumably Japan should have a similar kind of guild. But
oh, yeah, because they sort of make mention that there's like a government... there's a government group of people with abilities, and so he's trying to get him to help bring them
in,
to
be involved in that.
Even things out a bit.
Mm.
Yes, apparently Agatha Christie is part of the Order of the Clock Tower. Apparently their story ties into that. Four chapter story that four according to this wiki.
Well, there was so little happening in that, I imagine it'll be easy.
It must be mentioned in the book if it wasn't mentioned. Apparently, they're the organization who chased Mimic out of Europe.
Oh, because he was supposed to be Eastern European, wasn't he? I think he said that at some point.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it's going to matter too much.
No, I'm sure he won't. No.
Yeah.
Who the fuck cares?
Yeah, I don't think they've shown up too much anyway in the comic.
Mm.
It looks like she's the only one mentioned so far. Alrighty ho. That wraps up this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, please check out our regular podcast at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi.
See ya.